calendar today is Zurich American Insurance Company et al. Versus Iron Shore Specialty Insurance Company, case number 81428. Counsel, as you witnessed from the previous argument, when you're at the podium arguing, you may remove your mask for that purpose. All of the justices are vaccinated, and we are amply socially distanced from you folks, indeed from each other. Justice Stiglitz is participating in this argument as well by observing. She's out of town, and she'll be a part of this case. And Justice Silver is unfortunately detained and out of town, and she will be also participating, but viewing the argument at a future date and then conferencing with the justices when we conclude our actions on the case. So are you ready to proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, William Reeves on behalf of Appellants Zurich. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes if I could.
Okay.
Thank you. Your Honor, this case comes to this court through a certified question with the federal court, and we've provided a briefing flex that we've tried to provide context to this court relative to the dispute and the certified question. This context, respectfully, is very important. Matter involves a dispute between insurers, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's a duty to defend issue. And at the end of the day, the analysis is no different than if the insurer was before this court and pleading to this court why a duty to defend is owed. So what we're dealing with is what is the controlling standard associated with the duty to defend. Whether characterized as a dispute over burden or otherwise, again, it's the controlling standard. What does an insurer do when presented with a tender or defense? What is the analysis and what controls that standard relative to that analysis? In this instance, we have many, and frankly, almost core facts that are undisputed that come to this court. So it's really a very, very narrow issue that is in dispute. Just very briefly, the policies that Iron Shore issue afford coverage for damages because of property damage caused by an occurrence, with the damage covering damage during the policy period for which coverage is not excluded. And I'll unpack that a little. In terms of property damage, it's physical injury to tangible property. In terms of occurrence, it's generally an accident. And so generally, the policy is going to respond to damages or physical injury to tangible property caused by an occurrence during the policy period. But that's indemnity coverage. And what we're dealing with here is the duty to defend. And duty to defend is dictated by the potential for coverage. And that predominates this whole analysis because we're not dealing with actual coverage relative to indemnity. We're dealing with what triggers the defense obligation. The underlying matter, we have my office brought it, I brought it, and we did so in a packaged manner. We brought multiple claims or multiple underlying suits as one claim. And the reason for that is, again, the commonality, the undisputed set of circumstances. We have construction defect cases that involve single-family homes. Either come as Chapter 40 or as gone to suit. We have broad allegations of damage and defects asserted in those cases. In certain instances, and I learned this when I was putting together the briefing, certain law firms will use the same canned allegations. And so in one instance, I think I cited 6 or 8 different matters that had the same allegations relative to the complaint. And that's significant because the reality is, and again, this is context, there's a desire on the part of the claimants to trigger insurance coverage. That is a motive relative to the process. It's, as this court is likely aware, in Clark County here, we had a dedicated court associated. We still do. It's winded down a little, but construction defect is a very substantial cottage industry relative to the number of suits. The allegations in the complaint certainly allege an accident. There's no meaningful dispute to that. And so what I've seen is, in this case and some of the others, there is, I don't want to say confusion, but the exclusion that we're dealing with is for sudden accidental damages. And I focus only on sudden. And the reason I do that is there's no dispute that we have accidents or alleged accidents occurring here. That is, candidly, I don't believe disputed by my counterpart and on some level subsumed within, because there's no dispute here that the allegations fall within the insuring agreement on a potential standard, so that all we're dealing with is an exclusion. So if they fall within the insuring agreement relative to being a potential occurrence, then we necessarily have a potential accident. And so what we're left with is, were the damages, could they have occurred suddenly? And that's really the focus of all this. Ironshore doesn't dispute that the claims fall within the insuring agreement. The briefing before this court reflects that. We're dealing with an exclusion. And so within that exclusion, which is styled a continuous and progressive, they call it CP, continuous and progressive exclusion, what we're getting at are a circumstance where damages, they wish to exclude damages that are continuous in nature, but they have a give back for sudden damages. And so this whole case at this point is simply whether there's a potential that sudden damages occur. One last fact that's very important that's undisputed, the pleadings are silent as to the timing scope of the damages. They're broad allegations. They say that there were defects and there were resultant damages. The pleadings don't allege that the scope, the timing, the extent of the damages. And so what do we do when we have a circumstance where the allegations are vague and open-ended in that regard? The analysis of whether a duty to defend is owed is dictated by a comparison between the allegations, the complaint, and the pleading. And that's it. And so I read the briefing again, and there was this comment of, well, Carrier could have gone out and developed this, that, and the other while it was defending and bolstered its case. Well, Justices, if my client had done that, the response would have been, well, too late, because the analysis is dictated at the time of tender based upon the allegations of the complaint and the insurance policy. So we're all dealing with the same set of circumstances.
Well, Nautilus suggests it could be something else.
The
holding in Nautilus suggests it could be something else beyond just the complaint. It could also be facts as then known to the insurer.
Very much so. Agreed.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether that was developed here, but...
If I may, Your Honor, relative to that analysis, and again, this court has somewhat spoken a little differently on that relative to extrinsic facts, because this court has said certainly for triggering a duty to defend, extrinsic facts may be referred to. But relative to denial, this court actually has indicated that extrinsic facts cannot be used in evaluating the obligation, that the analysis comes in relative to terminating the duty once a defense is owed. So to your point, Your Honor, facts.
Well, but I'm not sure I agree with that characterization of the structure. I think the structure under our law, maybe not consistent with some other jurisdictions, but the structure under our law would require the insurer to come forward and point out what those extrinsic facts are in an effort to, in a deck relief action, be relieved of the responsibility to continue to offer the defense.
Assuming the insurer can meet its predicate duty of demonstrating the absence of a duty to defend, then certainly facts can be brought to bear. But it's at the time of tender, and that's my point relative to what is known at the time of tender.
I get that.
And again, in a circumstance where things are not pled and it's open-ended, how does a carrier meet its burden relative to the duty to defend? predicate matter carries a defendant false and baseless claims. So you don't get into weighing the merits or any of the claims. Trigger defense, the insured must demonstrate a false within the insuring agreement that you have a potential for physical injury to tangible property caused by an accident, damage potentially occurring during the policy period. But here's the most important point. Once that is met, it is the burden of the insurer to demonstrate conclusively that there's no potential for coverage. And that is the thrust of all this. And I apologize maybe if I led up to it. I'm almost done with my 10 minutes here. But that's the thrust of it, Your Honors. What is conclusive relative to this, relative to these allegations? Respectfully, Your Honor, they can't meet the burden relative to it because they never investigated. They never analyze it. They simply turn a blind eye to it and say, well, if it's not specifically pled, then ipso facto it didn't occur.
Well, maybe it wasn't very clear from my question, and likely my fault, but in Nautilus, where we set up a structure that allows for the examination of the allegations in the complaint or facts known to the insurer, necessarily suggests to me that it is the insurer that has the burden to come forward and demonstrate which of these you're relying on if you're going to deny the duty to defend.
If Your Honor's statement is the burden is on the insurer,
yeah,
then yes, Your Honor, I concur.
I mean, isn't that an outgrowth of what Nautilus holds?
Respectfully, yes. Certainly, from my vantage point, the carrier, again, to meet your burden, and it's a very high burden.
If the burden were on the insured, then we'd be asking the insured to try to demonstrate what the insurer knew or didn't know about
yes,
extrinsic
sir.
Facts.
Yes, sir. Agreed.
Okay. I have one point. You make the point in your briefs, and you just said it before you were speaking with Justice Hardesty, that IronShare didn't investigate. But the certification order says, after receiving these tender letters, IronShare investigated the claims and disclaimed coverage. So don't we have to accept the certified question as it comes to us?
No, Your Honor, you do not have to accept what the court said. And I apologize, I don't wish to overstate it. They certainly investigated it on some level. I don't wish to say there was zero investigation. The key was, did they investigate the potential for sudden damages? And that's in our brief, and that's a quote that I took from deposition testimony, where the answer is no, they don't investigate. And so when I use the word didn't investigate.
So you may be overstating things a bit because you're putting yourself in conflict with the Ninth Circuit.
Well, I apologize, Your Honor, but the Ninth Circuit presents it to you as a question, but says this court is able to reframe the question in any way it wants. And so.
Sure, but we can't reframe the facts that they certify over. I mean, it's one of those odd.
Well, I certainly don't wish to misstep of the Ninth Circuit if that's the mandate. My understanding, and again, apologies if I'm overstating it, is that the Ninth Circuit's looking for guidance. And again, I don't want to suggest that they didn't investigate whatsoever. What I am suggesting is they didn't investigate the sudden issue. And I believe the Ninth Circuit doesn't disagree with that. I believe it's borne out.
Yeah,
in the
fair
record.
Enough. Fair enough.
Well, and just let me go back a second again. If we can answer the question as they posed it, of course we will, given the facts that they demonstrate. But going back to one point, once the insurer has indicated that an exclusion applies, how come it doesn't become the insured's burden to come back and say, no, the exception to the exclusion applies? Isn't that your burden to come forward?
The answer is no, Your Honor, because they can't conclusively demonstrate the absence of coverage. And so to have a circumstance of an exclusion with a carve-out and they rely on the exclusion and don't address the carve-out, respectfully, they haven't met their burden. Because the burden is to conclusively prove the absence of coverage, and simply getting to that level doesn't suffice. And again, we're dealing with a circumstance where we have broad allegations that could fall within. So even if you want to put the burden on the insured, the overlay of it is a potential for coverage. And if the insured can demonstrate, look, there are allegations of property damage here, there's no contention that they occurred continuously, there's no contention that they occurred suddenly, therefore, I'm relying on the same evidence that you are, insurer, relative to demonstrating the potential for coverage. So I guess, in a sense, I've responded in two different ways.
So is that where the focus is in your mind, rather than whether or not it occurred within the policy period?
There's no dispute. The answer is yes. And again, we're dealing with the potential standards, so it's always, could it have occurred during the policy period? And the answer is yes, and they don't dispute that. And that's kind of the reconciliation. I'm going to blow through my whole 15 here. Why is it that they conclude that the allegations are broad enough that damage could have occurred during the policy period, but not so broad that damages could have occurred suddenly? Okay. So, I'll submit.
Great. I'll give you two additional minutes for your rebuttal, and you'll have two additional minutes, counsel, for your argument.
May it please the court, William Morrison for Ironshore Specialty Insurance Company. The issue presented for decision is actually quite narrow. Much of what the court just heard was duty to defend and the duty to defend standard. And in the Ninth Circuit's opinion referring this matter to this court, the Ninth Circuit stated, and this is a quote, page 812, the complaint alone would not trigger a duty to defend. The court goes on pages 807 to 810 to make the following points, and these are in the Ninth Circuit's opinion in its factual recitation. The Ironshore exclusion unambiguously excludes property damage caused by work that was completed before the Ironshore property's inception. It has nothing to do with continuous. As we explain at length in our brief, and I will not belabor it here, this continuous argument made by Zurich is made from whole cloth. You will not find that anywhere in the Ironshore exclusion. The Ninth Circuit also says all of the work at issue was completed before the Ironshore policy. That prior to the Ironshore policies, the Zurich insured each of the subcontractors doing the work. And only after the completion of the work did the subcontractors obtain insurance from Ironshore. The Ninth Circuit also says no complaint made any allegations of sudden and accidental property damage, let alone during the Ironshore policy period. The exception to the Ironshore exclusion requires three things: an accident, sudden, and during the Ironshore policy period. So property damage that is accidental, that is sudden, and that is during the Ironshore policy period. There are no allegations of any of that. The court below, the judge found that she didn't even see any allegations of an accident. That is not where the Ninth Circuit is, but the Ninth Circuit has said that no complaint made any allegations of sudden and accidental damage. There are two cases that the Ninth Circuit has, both coming from district court in Nevada, and and in the second one, Zurich stipulated that no one had any evidence of sudden damage. And that we cite, it's page 54 of the respondents.
So, counsel, but haven't we said that the duty to defend is very broad? It's evaluated right at the outset based on comparing allegations of the complaint with the policy. Now, if we don't have in the complaint an allegation one way or the other about whether it was sudden or long-standing, going back decades or whenever this was built, I don't know. Isn't that enough for there to be a potential for coverage until it's shown otherwise down the road and your client seeks deck relief?
And the answer, Your Honor, is no. I would refer the court to the landmark decision of, I'm going to call it Frontier, United National, where the sign collapsed. Mm-hmm. There, the prior insurer, when the work was done, was sued. And this court said there was no duty to defend by that insurer. And the insured and the subsequent insurer were both arguing, well, hey, there could have been some negligence that occurred before then. And this is Nevada's landmark decision on duty to defend. It cited more in insurance cases, probably more than any other case. It is cited constantly by both sides.
And it says what that's pertinent to my question?
It is that it's pertinent to your question that the absence of an allegation does not give rise to a duty to defend. That is how it's pertinent to your question.
So if there's an allegation that defects arose in these homes and there was damage, I guess let me ask you this. I understand we're being asked to talk about exclusions and exceptions to exclusions, but then starting with and where your opposing counsel started on the basic trigger of coverage being within the policy, was there enough in there, if not for the exclusion, that it would say there was an damage during the policy period that would trigger coverage?
No, Your Honor. And I know that my colleague said that we admit that there is coverage. We do not. We do know where. Not in our brief, not in our letters, not anywhere. I believe what my colleague is saying is that analytically, you do not get to an exclusion until you work your way through a coverage grant. And I believe that is where that argument comes from. We do not say that there is coverage. We say even if there is coverage, the exclusion applies. And the Ninth Circuit agrees with us.
I think they asked us.
Let me go back. Because
if they're done, we can be done here.
I'm talking about the exclusion, not the exception to the exclusion.
Aha, thank you.
And the exclusion, unquestioned, the Ninth Circuit could not be more clear. They said the exclusion applies. So what we're talking about now...
Because the construction happened before the policy period.
Correct.
Okay,
And the court said it's undisputed. And in any event, that's what they found. So back again to the certified question, it's really quite narrow.
Right. About burden. I mean, you concede that you would have the burden on the exclusion, but the burden then shifts to prove the exception to the exclusion back to the proponent.
Exactly, Your Honor. And indeed, this will come up. It's come up around the country. We cited every cases from every state that have dealt with it. I won't go through that. In Nevada, where it comes up, and in most states, where it comes up frequently is when an affirmative defense is proved. Then the burden is on the other party to show that there's an exception to the affirmative defense. This is analogous to that. We showed that our affirmative defense, our exclusion, applies. The work was done prior to the inception of the policy period, therefore it's excluded. And then the exception to the exclusion is, was there property damage that was accidental, that was sudden, and that was during the Ironshore policy period? Well, none of that is in the complaint. Nevada law does not allow speculation to create coverage. The court could have easily speculated in United National that there was There could have been negligence. There could have been some damage in that prior policy period. But no, the court, I believe rightfully, did not engage in speculation.
So then not only do you argue they have the burden, but they have that they have to present, since the complaint wouldn't establish it, they'd have to come forward with other evidence outside of the complaint to show it was a sudden and accidental.
During the Iron Shirt policy period, yes. Our position is the burden is on them, and so they need to come forth with something. They need to come forth with something specific to show a potential. Right now, it is pure speculation. The absence of an allegation does not prove that the other applies. The absence of a sudden and accidental allegation doesn't mean it's a potential for sudden and accidental. I don't find that logical.
So just to fit that into facts, if the contractor built a house that had a bad roof, but being Nevada, we didn't have rain for 220 days, and then there was a torrential downpour, and that torrential downpour occurred during your policy period, after the completion of the work, but during your policy period, would that be covered under this sudden and accidental exception?
I would add a couple more facts, but the answer is yes. The water would need to enter the house and cause damage.
Right. Yes.
So the answer is yes, because you've just satisfied, assuming that there's some back and forth on construction defect. What's an accident?
Yes.
Is that the way they intended to put the roof on? Let's just say there was a loose tile.
Yes.
Let's say that somebody just didn't fully affix it.
So my lead up to that, assuming all those other facts are there, is it would then take the insured to say, well, on June 29th, 2021, there was a torrential downpour and there hadn't been a drop of rain in Las Vegas for a year. So I now have facts that bring it in, and that's enough?
Oh, that's absolutely enough for a defense obligation.
But then the burden is on him to come forward with that.
The burden is on the insured to come forward. It's consistent with burdens of proof generally, proving a positive as opposed to a negative.
The fact is just that the complaint is silent. You think and a duty to defend, that's enough for you to thrust the burden as an insurer onto the insured to come forward with facts showing a weather occurrence.
No, there's a step before that, Your Honor. The step before that is Ironshore has already established that the exclusion applies, that the work was completed.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, no, we don't just, you know, walk in belly up to the bar and say it's all on you, insured. And we're absolutely not saying that. We're not trying to rewrite law.
So your colleague argues that the question is broader, that what you're supposed to respond to isn't just the existence of the exclusion, but rather you're to respond to the broader question, are there any set of facts for which there is a potential exposure, which would include your obligation to address the exception to the exclusion. That's how I understand his argument, that you're to respond to the broader question, not parse through the exclusion and then shift to the insured the responsibility to address the exception to the exclusion, but that is something that is expected of the insurer.
Yes, I think Nevada law is sophisticated, not simple. The simple argument that my colleague has made is the language shows up in exclusion, therefore the insurer has to prove it. Essentially every other court to consider that, and I submit that Nevada's own law says you read the entire policy and you put it in context and you give the words meaning and you don't apply simplistic analysis, that if language is an exclusion, ipso facto, the burden is on the insurer to prove it, or in this case, to disprove it, to prove a negative.
As a practical matter, you're going to be deep into a construction defect lawsuit where there's all kinds of discovery and testing and thing analysis and engineers and all that going on to decide whether this water damage, if that's what it is, was caused today or whether it's been creeping and little bits of water damage over the last 10 years. And wouldn't that defeat the whole purpose of the broad duty to defend if you're not establishing the duty to defend until you've done all that discovery?
No, because, Your Honor, you're leaving out the part where, one, the Ninth Circuit says the complaints on their face say there's no duty to defend. The court says that in 807 to 810. So right there, the court says, quote, the complaint alone would not trigger a duty to defend. That is on page 812. So that's first. Second, Ironshore has to prove that the construction was completed before the inception of its policy, and then any damage from construction before the policy is presumed to have occurred before the policy, because that's what the language says. This is not the court. The Ninth Circuit didn't give a soup to nuts duty to defend case to you. Now, my colleague would very much like you to decide a soup to nuts duty to defend case. The Supreme Court's already found there was no duty to defend under the complaint. It's right there in black and white. And they also found in black and white that the exclusion applies. What they presented to this court, and it's an interesting question, and as I said, we cited 26 cases from around the country that have considered it and have said that is an exception to an exclusion. It is exactly like proving whether the damage is in the coverage grant. Therefore, the burden is on the insured to prove it. The other thing about this case is all insureds received a defense here. This is an equitable subrogation case. No insured was left out in the cold. These policies were designed to do exactly what they did. For a smaller premium, there's narrower coverage because there was another carrier who was going to provide the defense. And that's precisely what happened. And what you have is somebody trying to get collect money for some that where there's not coverage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Thank you, Your Honors. Let me deal with that last point first, because that's where I started. Just because this is a contribution action between insurers, it's not a different analysis. It's not a different standard. So please don't be misled by the fact that the insured is not standing here. The policies respond to damage during their policy period. They're not, it's an unfortunate argument because it tries to take away from what we're dealing with here. Counsel points out, well, there might have been available facts. Facts could have been developed during the case that could have shed light on all this. That turns the whole duty to defend on its head. The issue here is not facts. It's allegations. It's pled. The analysis is what is pled at the time. How do you compare that to your policy relative to the potential standard? Counsel, respectfully, I think overstates what the Ninth Circuit did, because if the Ninth Circuit simply held there's no duty to defend, then there's nothing more to be done. The court struggled with the concept that I've brought to this court, which is how does a carrier conclusively demonstrate the absence of coverage? How does it meet its burden there? What's the interplay with the exception?
Well, let me interrupt you, because look, both of you gentlemen are terrific attorneys, but I think we keep getting away from what the Ninth Circuit sent us is who has the burden, not how do you establish that burden or what's the merits of being challenged, but who has the burden. So from your perspective, what is the wisdom or policy considerations that would justify the insured not having the burden of establishing the exception, i.e. reestablishing coverage after an exclusion has been.
I'm going to answer your question.
Okay.
But let me start by saying I think the insurer bears that burden. But let's assume the insured bears that burden. The burden is met based upon the allegations in the complaint. So respectfully, we're going to the same set of information. What do those allegations have? If the burden can only be met by having the word sudden in there, then certainly insured can meet the burden. But the issue, and I'll leave with this, is speculation versus what is already pled and what logically flows from that. Speculation is in a property damage case if somebody said, well, somebody probably had a bodily injury there too. Mold is alleged. They probably had a bodily injury claim. That's speculation. That's not pled. Timing of the damage, whether it's continuous, it occurred at a discrete time, it occurred suddenly, that's not speculation. That's simply broad allegations of a complaint. And that's the thrust of where we are, because I'm relying on the same information. So if the insurer bears the burden, it's going straight to the complaint. And it's the same broad allegations, and that's how the insured would meet the burden. Unless there's any other, I have lots I could talk about, but I appreciate the allotted time. Have so many questions, I'll submit.
Thank you.
I don't see any, so the matter will stand submitted. Thank you, counsel, for your briefs and your arguments here today. We'll be in recess until 4 o'clock.